CoOptimus.com presents the CoOptiCast.
Hello and welcome back to another fine episode of the CoOptiCast. This is episode 35 for Sunday, January 10th, 2010 or 2010. I'm not really sure how I want to say that yet, but it's the future. And
the future is now.
And as you've heard, I'm joined by our good friend Jason Love, and Nick Paleo is there in the background, breathing heavy, or something.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. But yeah, how's everybody's New Year?
I'm still missing my flying car.
Yeah, I feel like I was lied to somehow.
Yeah.
I'll skip the flying car and go straight for the hoverboard.
Well, the hoverboard's not going to be around until 2015 when Back to the Future 2 takes place. So also when we can expect Jaws 19 in 3D.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. They got a lot of catching up to do. They've got, what, 14 movies to release between now and then?
Pretty much. Although if you'd seen a lot of the news about CES this year, 3D is all the rage. So it is only a matter of time before we get that 3D hologram attacking us in the middle of the road.
Nice.
And as it is a new year, why don't we talk about what we've been playing? Let's let Jason go first.
All right. So this past week, I've mostly been playing Indigo Prophecy, a five-year-old game now, but one that I'm just getting around to because of the Steam sales that they had over the holiday. A lot of co-op, and one of the other games was Indigo Prophecy. It's like the game that I've always wanted to play. I mean, just the pure interactivity of that was amazing up until about the last quarter or so of the game when the wheels fly off the wagon and you're suddenly wondering what the Matrix is and all kinds of crazy stuff.
And what the hell this Mayan dude has to do with it. And, you know, now 2012 is relevant. What the hell?
Why you have to play Simon when you do QuickTime events, beep, boop, boop, beep.
Yeah. That was really rough when it came out. I played it on the Xbox, so I didn't have to deal with a lot of the bad control issues I had on the PC because it didn't support a lot of gamepads when it came out, and you still had to do the gamepad Simon. And they had, if I remember correctly, they had a way to map the Simon stuff to the keyboard, so you'd use like WASD and then like IJKL to do it. It was pretty bad, but the game's pretty awesome.
It's even worse, like definitely on the keyboard, because when I first picked it up and I went through the tutorial, they were like, use the arrow keys, and I'm sitting there and I'm, when was the last time you ever used arrow keys for a PC game? So yeah. I got to play a little bit of Uncharted 2 finally, although not nearly as much as I would have hoped to have played, but still just so freaking awesome. Other than that, post the review, and I've been playing some Crystal Bears and all the beach bikini booty bashing shaking that you can stand with that game. Some Dragon Age Origins, going through that again as a new character and trying to go through it as a different way and see what happens.
Cool. That game is, it lends itself well to replaying, as I have seen.
Especially when you know what to do the second time around and you can skip, like, half of the dialogue.
Yeah, that's true. So, Nick, what you been playing?
Mostly been playing Bayonetta, which I'm really enjoying. It is action game porn, I guess. It's the best way to describe it. And it's probably... I'm gonna break a rule in our podcast, so I'm going to say it's the biggest cock tease game I've played in a long time. Because if you don't know, for people listening, if you don't know, basically, the cooler the move you do with Bayonetta, the nakeder she gets. And
yes. Some of her moves, she'll do like a little strut, and it'll take a photo for you. Yeah.
And there's a lot of strategic object placement in the game, if you know what I mean.
And gratuitous crotch shots and cutscenes and oh my.
But above and beyond that, just the animation and the flow of combat and it's just really, really well done. I was pleasantly surprised. So I've been playing a lot of that. Also been playing Zombie Bowl-O-Rama, which I picked up for 99 cents on one of the Steam sales, which is pretty fun. And, oh, I've also been playing Zero Day Attack on Earth, which is...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, most games I can find, like, some redeeming qualities with, but I'm really having a hard time with Zero Day. It's just...
Isn't it a cool use of Google Maps?
No, because... there's not even much detail in the maps themselves, so just the gameplay is so frustrating. And so it's a 4-player co-op game. Even if you're playing it by yourself, it throws in some AI guys. The AI, I swear to God, I think they just like give it random bursts of commands to do, because like they'll follow you to like a guy to attack, and then they'll just like dance around. They might fire like 2 or 3 bullets. They'll look the other direction. They'll swing back and forth. Like, just shoot at the big freaking monster on the screen. It's not that hard.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, it's pretty bad.
So, but here's the bigger question. Are the big freaking monsters ants that they call aliens?
No, it's not as cool as Earth Defense Force. No, no.
Earth Defense Force reigns supreme.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty bad, the review. I might give the general score of the game a 0.5 at this point.
Oh.
The co-op's okay, when you actually have some people with you that can help, because there's a rescue mechanic and stuff like that. But overall, especially for $15, compared to like the twin stick shooters out there that's on arcade and PlayStation Network, if it was a $5 title, maybe.
If it was an indie Xbox indie title, you might be able to forgive it.
Yeah, exactly. Not something from Square Enix.
Yeah, that I've heard nothing but bad things about that game, and I, for one, look forward to your overwhelmingly negative review of it. I like bad reviews of... I like negative reviews of really undeniably bad games. I've been playing more Demon's Souls, because, once again, that game is incredibly awesome.
You enjoy being abused?
I do. I might have a bit of a problem, because I'm also playing Final Fantasy VIII. And, to ease the pain, I have also playing Bayonetta, which I said it to Nick this morning, but I came for the Okami reference, and I was not disappointed. There is a very subtle Okami reference pretty early on in the game. And there's a lot of references to video games in general. I'm sure Nick has spotted a bunch of them, but game starts out by you bury Dr. Robotnik. Like, he's called Eggman in Japan and I guess in the latest games here, but it's his funeral you're attending.
Yeah.
And they do a bunch of other really random game references, and it's very fun. And whoever the character animator was for Bayonetta is probably the best in the business, because I cannot think of anything in that game that isn't flawlessly animated. Like, all of her moves string together, and it's like you play a lot of these big action games, and you'll do one special attack and then another, and you kind of see the jerk in animation as it switches animation cycles. And there is none of that in this game, and I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, you end up in a lot of, one move you end up in a certain position, and it transitions into another move, like, really seamlessly. Like, we were talking about the whole breakdancing move.
Yeah.
And how you can unlock another piece of that, or then it goes to, like, an upward attack, too.
Yeah, it's just, like, if you like Devil May Cry game style action, it is... far and away the best one, at least as far as combat goes. I mean, the story is, I don't know.
Yeah, but
it's random as hell. There's not really anything. There's not really anything strong about it, other than the fact that it's pretty funny. It's great. It's absolutely a great game. I've also been playing Darksiders, which I believe we talked about at length last time when Phil was on, and. It's pretty awesome as well, in a very different way. I'm mostly impressed with like the controls and the combat and everything is fun, and it definitely lifts heavily out of Zelda and Soul Reaver and a lot of games like that. But the real thing that impresses me constantly about the game is the strength of the art style. And whether or not you like Joe Mad's art or not is up to you, but that game stands out. Like, you'd expect a game about the apocalypse to be brown and gray with, you know, blood everywhere. And
gray-brown, possibly?
Yeah, pretty much. But they're like this is the most vibrantly colorful game I have played in a long time. Like, all the colors, the contrast is, like, cranked way the hell up. You know, everything looks great. The frame rate's really fluid, except in very rare occasions when it dips down. But it's...
There's the whole screen-tearing thing, right?
Is the screen-tearing thing. But as far as I've heard, it doesn't exist very much on the PS3 version. And there's a patch coming for the 360 one to get rid of it. So I can look past that. The unforgivable bug in it is that it does not save your preferences if you invert the Y-axis. So every time I load the game up, I have to re-invert my controls.
Well, that's annoying.
It is annoying, but hopefully they'll get that fixed.
Do you have, just a question, do you have your Y-axis inverted in your Xbox preferences?
Yeah.
Like, you do? Okay, I was curious. I know some games, like, they always load those preferences, so I thought maybe that might have been it.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's more so than a lot of other games. It nails a sense of scale. Like, when there's a huge boss... It's not just a big it's not just a big model. Like, you feel it, you know, because you'll get in a lot of these games, you'll get like a huge boss, but it doesn't move like it's huge. And these bosses are, they move quickly, but you can feel the weight behind them. And I really like it, and it's really long. I think I'm only halfway through the game, and I'm already at about 10 hours. And you think about like a God of War game or something like that, and I'd be nearing the end on one of those at this point. But it's really good. So let's move on and talk about this week's news. And the biggest one came out of CES. Microsoft announced a new Xbox Live thingamajig called Game Room, which is kind of like your own virtual arcade. And it's really interesting. They're launching it with 31 games. And they're all, like, old classic arcade titles, and Adventure is in there, which makes me laugh. You got a bunch of stuff like Centipede, Crystal Castles, Gravatar, Lunar Lander, Millipede, Pitfall, Red Baron, Scramble, and a bunch of other games.
What I wonder about those, a lot of those you just named, like, already were re-released on Xbox Live Arcade.
Like, yeah.
So I wonder if they're going to... You know, somehow tie that in and give you the titles that you own already on arcade in the Game Room thing, or I don't know.
You might have to pay like a premium, like pay 160 Microsoft points to get the arcade.
Yeah.
Or they charge you a one-time fee to import everything. I don't know. They haven't announced details on that, but they have announced details on the pricing structure. And for each game you want to populate your Game Room with, you get three options. You know, you can pay $5 or 400 Microsoft space dollars, and it'll let you play the game on your 360 and your PC. You can pay 240 Microsoft points and only play it on your 360, or you can pay 40 Microsoft points, the equivalent of 50 cents, and buy yourself one credit to play the game. And as far as I know, there's achievements for all these, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if you can maybe get an achievement for, you know, popping in two quarters and going at it. I can see, you know, some kind of absurd group of gamers challenging themselves to earn the achievements with a single play they allow you to do that. So what do you guys think about this?
I think it's
waiting for the... Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's brilliant, but I also think it's kind of low. Like, I think most smart people can see what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think the rest of the people are going to fall for it, so.
Yeah, the 50 cents worth of play feels a lot to me like you're having us pay for a demo. I know the arcade paradigm. You pop two quarters in, and that's what you get. But in the age of Xbox Live Arcade, when you can get the demo version of a lot of these same games for free,
yeah,
asking for 50 cents to play it.
This is a good opportunity for them to, you know, add value to the whole gold subscription thing and be like, you know, every month you get $10 or $5 of arcade credits to use, right? And you can go in there and use your virtual monies and play a couple games in the arcade.
Yeah, or even if you have a gold subscription, you get a core set of the games or something for free.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the documentary that's it's the king of Microsoft, and watch Billy Mays and Steve Wiebe battle it out online on the Xbox Live game room. That'd be pretty cool.
Billy Mays playing from beyond the grave? Do you mean Billy Mitchell?
Sorry, Billy Mitchell, yeah. I have Billy Mays on the
mic for some
reason. That'd be really bad. No, yeah. But I think it was interesting, too. I mean, in the news post, you brought up the article that we had of co-op gaming and arcades, and the whole thing about arcades in general as like a pastime for gaming almost. It's really the experience of it, of being in the arcade itself and putting in the quarters and having the joysticks now in the cabinet feel, that charging money kind of to do it virtually just seems really wrong. You're not going to get that same feel. Yeah, you can kind of walk around and come up to a cabinet and say, here's your 40 space bucks to let me play. But as you guys said, it's you're charging for what feels like a demo or for something that's just not going to be quite the same.
Yeah, if I'm going to pop 50 cents into an arcade machine, it better be half broken, it better smell like cigarettes, and there better be bad music playing in the background that I can't hear anything else over.
At least 5 pieces of gum stuck to it.
Yeah, at least 1/4 slot that's not working. Yeah, they should actually put in a mechanic where you pop in the 40 Microsoft points and it'll randomly reject it. or it'll only take 20 and you have to keep putting the other 20 back in before it'll go. And then, you know, like, the A button won't work. There's all sorts of fun things that you could do with it if they want to be authentic. That's and right. I might be willing to pay for that just a couple times for the humor. And let's move on. We have a bit of a mystery this week where the Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2 content has been pulled from Xbox Live and the PlayStation Network. And I really still don't know what to make of this.
Speaking of shading dealies, right?
Yeah. It's weird, too, because like the game entry isn't even up there anymore. Like, you can't even see the demo or the gamer picks or anything. It's just gone.
So. Yeah.
And we were doing some research for it to see. We thought, oh, maybe it's some kind of licensing thing. And earlier this year, Marvel and Activision extended the license till like 2017. So the only thing that someone had brought up in the forums is maybe somehow the Disney deal affected it, where Disney had bought Marvel, and maybe, you know, there's something there. I don't know, but very weird.
Definitely. You know what? The game was average, but it wasn't so bad that you'd think that they'd pull everything down in embarrassment. And it is Activision, right? So they're not going to want to, you know, limit their options for making money in any way.
Well, I think what a lot of people on the forums there said is probably accurate. They're just going to post up a gold version in a few months with a new doohickey controller expansion to use exclusively for Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2, and Bobby Kotick will feel really good about himself.
We'll get a new photo of him with a peripheral over his shoulder.
And devil horns, yeah.
It'll be some strange mashup between the Tony Hawk ride board and a Guitar Hero guitar.
Yeah. So, I believe we've talked about the 8-bit Left 4 Dead D-make before on the podcast, and if not, well, we're going to talk about it now.
You mean the 8-bit Left 4 Dead Awesome?
Yes. It has been finished. You can download it, and it does have 2-player co-op, which is pretty amazing. And I'm glad that Valve hasn't stepped in their way, because this is just too funny. It's a top-down NES level version of Left 4 Dead. And that blows my mind.
The funny thing is, like, the whole time I was playing it, all I could think of was Fester's Quest, that old NES game where you're playing as Fester and it's top-down.
I heard a lot of people say that.
And I'm also wondering if, I mean, you mentioned Valve, and it's really great, too, that they didn't step in to nix it. But I'm wondering if, you know, with the popularity of this, and even for Left 4 Dead, if at some point maybe they'll come in here and try to get it offered up on Steam somehow that includes online co-op, which would be really cool.
Actually, you know, it'd be really cool is if a future Left 4 Dead campaign had a room in it where it had, you know how in the Dark Carnival you could play a lot of the Midway games?
Yeah.
Well, it'd be really great if you popped into someone's bedroom and this game was on the TV and you could actually play it.
It's like the Galaxy Wars of Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, pretty much. How does it run on its own executable, or do you have to use an emulator for it?
I believe it just runs on its own executable. Actually, I didn't look at it. I was too busy playing it to notice or care.
Ah, okay. Well, it'd be especially funny if you could load this up into an emulator, because I know a lot of people, like my Dreamcast has a disc that has an NES emulator and some games on it, so it'd be kind of funny to go really weird and recursive and play a fake NES game on an NES emulator in a Dreamcast. I don't know. It would amuse me.
You so crazy.
You're so crazy. So here's a bit of a fun rumor. Remember when we said that the next Call of Duty game would be historical? Everyone's like, well, duh, World War II is historical. And we made some cracks about it, being set in ancient Rome or, anything like that. Some people were speculating Civil War. Well, the latest rumor is that it's going to be set in Vietnam. And as long as it's not like Shell Shock, Nom 76, or whatever that horrible, horrible PC game was, I could deal with it. It's kind of an untapped setting.
Yeah, Viet Cong on the PC was a pretty decent shooter back in the day. So
Battlefield Vietnam was all right, too, if I remember.
Yeah.
All I know is I want the Tropic Thunder of Call of Vietnam first-person shooters.
It'd be interesting if they went that route, like a comedy.
I don't think they could afford Robert Downey Jr. Because everyone would demand to play as him.
They just need to hire somebody to play Robert Downey Jr. playing somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. It's the dude playing the dude playing the dude playing the other dude.
Exactly.
In co-op. So yeah, it might be set in Vietnam. Obviously, we don't have anything to go off of, but that would be pretty cool. Can you tell it's a kind of a light news week in the first of the year? And
coming out for them to do news.
A lot more information has come out about Spec Ops: The Line, and I know Nick is really looking forward to this. Interestingly enough, I don't believe this has anything to do with the actual Spec Ops series that people know.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. I think it just ended up being the name that they chose.
Yeah, because those are those weird budget shooters that have been coming out on like the Xbox and PC for 5 or 6 years now, and a lot of people are like, well, this game looks nice, but it's crap, and I'm pretty sure it's not made by those guys.
It's definitely not the developer. It might be a 2K thing, though. I don't know if 2K published those other games. Mm-hmm. So it might, they might have given the name rights to, it's Yager Interactive, it's the people that are making this.
Mm-hmm.
They might have given the rights to them to do it. So it really, I don't know, it looks really unique in terms of some of the things that they're trying to do. And the trailer is really impressive. If you haven't seen the trailer, we posted it on the site with the news post, so check it out. The big mechanic in it is going to be that the ground is actually in some places glass because it's buildings buried in sand, and you can shoot it out, and then the sand and the whole terrain deforms as it slides in and fills the building up, and you can go through the buildings then too. That's kind of like underground, beneath this buried city, and come back up. And
yeah, so. And I have, you know, I did a quick Wikipedia because I wasn't sure about myself, and it actually is in that series.
Okay, so it is.
So
so Yager,
it looks great, contrary to those other ones.
The only thing I have to contribute is the screenshot that you use kind of makes it look like that's Fitty in the foreground, even though I know it's not.
I think that would be any game would be better if you put Fitty Cent as a playable character in it.
That'd be a good Easter egg if you found the diamond-encrusted skull.
It was actually in Dubai. He was looking in the wrong place.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a bit of news about EA shutting down a lot of its older sports game servers because, well, I'm pretty sure not a lot of people are playing them at this point, and they need to, you know, recycle their hardware or force people to buy the new version of the game. You know, pick your conspiracy theory. But there's an achievement in NBA Live 07 that requires 1,000 gamers to be playing online at the same time. And a lot of people want that 100-point achievement, and the good folks at Xbox360Achievements.org are trying to get 1,000 people online before the server goes offline. And that's going to take place on January 31st at 6 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, so translate that at your own peril. But it's just kind of funny to think about all these weird random achievements that require things like that. Like some of the viral achievements or the, you know, play online with a developer. Well, this studio got shuttered, so how the hell am I supposed to do that? You know, a lot of achievements that actually become unattainable over time. So that's kind of neat, I guess. What do you guys think?
I think you can get 10 times the achievement points if you play another old game called King Kong.
No, Avatar The Last Airbender. Remember, you load it up and, you know, hit the punch button for about 5 minutes and you get all 1,000.
Interesting editorial, though, what you just said, Mike. Like, all the achievements that are now unattainable because of, you know, this or that.
Yeah, servers going offline, developers shuttering, you know, just lack of interest. I'm sure there's probably been a game that had an achievement that was... It would have been attainable if more people had played, but you never know.
Or even, like, bugged ones that never worked, but the game isn't supported anymore and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about... Nick, you brought this up when we were playing Halo Waypoint this Friday, but what the numbers are that we get for that, for when we do those kinds of things, and getting achievements that way. That might be interesting.
Yeah.
Doing true co-op instead of this NBA Live 07.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always MAG, I guess. You know, if you want your 256 players, you know, in a match... But
I tried the beta of that this weekend. It's a lot of downtime. Like, I don't know. Like, the spawn points seem to be pretty far away from the action a lot of the time. So, and you die a lot. So it's like, run, die, spawn, run, die, spawn, run.
There was a Penny Arcade about that where you run. They say you run for 5 minutes and get sniped by someone you can't see, and then repeat.
Yeah, it's pretty much pretty close to that, except I kept getting knifed.
I suppose it's kind of like jumping into a game like, what is it, SOCOM or Counter-Strike, something, a game with a really hardcore community, and I'm assuming a lot of the people playing MAG are people who came over from SOCOM, so they kind of have a built-in hardcore tactical shooter mentality, and if you just pop in to say, hey guys, what's up? You're probably not going to have the best of times. I don't know. And we're going to talk about the little quick stories that don't warrant too much discussion. But of all things, the iPhone port of Nazi Zombies is the topping the list of the top 10 iPhone games right now.
Yeah, for 2009, I think, right? It was for the whole year, it was in the top.
Yeah, I think it was the list of top grossing. I checked it out. I didn't pay $10 for this, but it's.
What do we say every time one of those map packs came up? Why isn't this on Xbox Live Arcade or PSN?
Yeah, and they put it on the iPhone, which is, you know, I like iPhone games, but I definitely don't like iPhone games where you give me a fake analog stick somewhere on the screen. Didn't work. It didn't work in a lot of DS, like early DS games that tried it. So, you know, why haven't we learned this lesson? Anyway, check it out. Nazi Zombies. Halo Reach is going to be on the cover of the next Game Informer. You know, judging from the art, it might only be 5-player co-op. I know we've been speculating at 6, but there's 5 Spartans on the cover. And I guess we'll know more when the issue hits subscribers. I think it was next week.
Yeah, I think they just shipped them, so pretty soon.
Yeah. And Mad Moxie, her Underdome Riot, the Trials of the Painted Queen, if you will, is now available to PC players and PS3 owners. So check them out, because everyone likes Borderlands DLC. So we're going to take a little break here. During our break, you're actually going to hear a snippet out of a larger interview with Eric Chartrand on rewarding players for multiplayer experience, co-op, etc. He's from EA, and he worked on Army of Two, the 40th Day. And once we get done with that, Jason's going to give us a bit of a rundown about Army of Two.
The problem with updates, with Unlock, is that it's a double-edged sword. You need to be careful with that. You need to be able to let the people be able to step in and be competitive without having all of this gear, but still the gear you give them, the unlock, has to be meaningful so that they want to fight for it, to get to it. And not many games do it right. So this is a good challenge, and I think it's a challenge for all of us. When I mean us, I mean all the people who are making multiplayer games. It's a community thing. It's a game design thing. Finding a way to reward player for playing without unbalancing too much for the guy who played 250 hours compared to you only played 10 hours. The second to second, that's what we wanted to focus on. The experience that it's fun to play. Some games are good. You're not having that much fun, but you know that 2 more kills will get you a reward. So you're going to jump in again just for those 2 more kills to get the reward, but you're not having that much fun. The experience has to be sufficient in its own right for people to come back and play. If you come back and play just because of the cherry blossom we give you, then it's kind of miss something, like we don't achieve. But again, I have to admit, I'm saying all of this. I think we do succeed on one, but we do fail on the reward, and we're going to fix that.
Okay, and we're back, and Jason, we brought him on for a reason, you know, not because he's pretty, but because he played Army of Two the 40th Day. He's, you know, been to the community events that EA has been throwing, and he played it at PAX, and he's going to talk about the game. So, Jason, take it away.
All right. Well, first I just wanted to say thanks to Spencer Norrish and Ron Yatko from EA for inviting us out to all the community events for Army of Two the 40th Day. So based on, and a lot of this has already gone up on the site for last month with the community event in Montreal, but during the time there, I got to sit down with Eric Chartrand, who you just heard from the interview snippets, and talk with him about the multiplayer portion of Army of Two, which includes the extraction mode, the new extraction mode. And in the interview that we just played, that little short bit, he and I were talking about the benefits and, you know, the way that you balance it and what's the right way to go about rewarding players for playing the game. And in terms of a multiplayer experience, you know, this is akin to what Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2 do, of giving you new guns, new abilities, and things of that nature. And this can be expanded, though, to include sort of co-op. And there's a bunch of different things of, you know, we've highlighted achievements and certain unlockables that you can get for playing a game co-op that, that developers put in there. And the interesting thing, I think, with Army of Two is that basically the reward is the game itself. I mean, it's a far, far more rewarding experience to play that game co-op than it is from a single player and just going through solo with a co-op AI buddy. And all the times I've, you know, which have just been a few, but in the times I've gotten a chance to play it, and the demo is out now, so hopefully other folks have had a chance to play it as well. It's just, I mean, it works really well, and you can tell that this is a game that they spent a lot of time learning the lessons from the previous one and moving on to this one of what they could do better. And it's unique, I think, for them to, like with this and Left 4 Dead 2, Borderlands, all, you know, a lot of games have come out recently. They're rewarding players for working cooperatively by making the game itself rewarding instead of just say, all right, well, here's a little trinket, here's a toy. There's, you know, small variations of this where they have, you know, better loot. For example, in Borderlands, the more players you have, the better loot you're going to get. But I don't know, just thought it was something interesting to talk about here, and even from the community of their thoughts of, you know, what is the best sort of balance here? What's the right thing to do? Is it good to say, all right, you've played this game for X number of hours, so we're going to reward you for doing that? Or is it better to reward players for the game experience itself? And start off, I guess, with Mike and Nick. What did you guys think?
I think I like the theory that you should make the game rewarding to play in multiplayer, especially in co-op, because that's what we like. And with Army of Two in particular, I've heard a lot of people say that the game is really fun in co-op and it's not fun in single player, because just the aggro mechanic and things like that kind of require you to, you know, call out shots and pay attention to everything that's going on. And, you know, it's great that the game is intended to be played in co-op, but if you know, a lot of people don't play multiplayer, and if you cheapen your experience at the expense of, if you make the game better, but you let the single player suffer because of it, that can be, that can also, you know, bite you, I find. Try playing Borderlands by yourself, and it's not that great after a couple hours, because, you know, the crux of that game is, you know, getting awesome loot and showing it off to your buddies, like, holy crap, this, you know, shotgun fires rockets, and those rockets explode into other rockets which shoot bees and, you know, make stuff explode. And that's entertaining on your own, but it's not entertaining, you know, past the novelty doesn't extend if you can't show it off to other people. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but I think it's a great idea to make multiplayer rewarding, because it definitely extends the life of your game. Certainly. Nick?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think one thing this generation of games, you know, 360, PlayStation 3 and stuff, the theme has been rewards in a sense of achievements, and now you got things like the Avatar Awards and things like that on the 360, and then the trophies on the PlayStation 3. Just from that sense, that social mechanic of showing those things off has been huge, and I think it probably took a lot of developers by surprise with just how popular it got. And then, you know, from the multiplayer aspect, another thing that came this generation, you have Call of Duty, Modern Warfare. When that came out, the multiplayer mode in that, there was no achievements for it, but it was incredibly popular because it was all about unlocking the next big thing, the next gun, the next insignia, the next whatever it was. And so it became incredibly addictive for people to level up their characters and unlock the next thing. And again, like you said, Mike, show that off to their friends. Oh, you got this scope for the gun now? That's really cool, you know, stuff like that. So I think if the developers want to reward people for multiplayer and for co-op, that's the kind of things that they're gonna keep doing. And I think we're just probably starting to see some of the unique things that they can do with it.
I think. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. It was kind of into my thought.
I think Uncharted 2 actually did a really good job of this, because the money you earn in single player can go towards stuff that will unlock in multiplayer, but the money you earn in multiplayer can also be used for stuff in single player. Like, you can buy, it has a lot of the same unlockables as the first Uncharted, like the weird rendering modes and the alternate characters and things. But the fact that the money, money earned in one mode doesn't preclude from using it in the other worked really well. So a person that worked hard playing the single player game can still earn things for multiplayer to say, yeah, this person's invested time in this game. Look at, I have this perk, or I have, this character model. And I would like to see more stuff like that, I would think.
The Uncharted 2 is a good example, because that's one I actually brought up, was asking him about that, of what he thought of Uncharted 2's mode. And, the response that he gave was, and he admits this too, is that for Army of Two, they don't really have those rewards in place. And I kind of mentioned this in the back in the impressions, is that the multiplayer doesn't have any rewards that carry over from single player. So the guns and stuff like that you unlock in single player, you don't have access to in multiplayer. And in fact, the number of guns that you have in multiplayer are limited to just, the same packs that everyone can use, and it's sort of up to you to choose how to use them, which makes sense from some degrees of, you want people to have it balanced, and how do you work it out just right. But the Uncharted 2, where you're able to just, unlock skins, unlock different, styles of guns, things of that nature, I think he kind of said was one way to kind of approach it, and sort of a way to build towards rewarding players. From my kind of own personal point of view, I thought, it kind of comes down to, I sort of agree with him that if you're rewarding people just for doing something like gaining achievement, or you play so long and you get this, at what point does it get that, you say, all right, I did that achievement, I'm going to put the controller down and walk away, because it was so frustrating to get the achievement, or that's all I wanted to do, and now I'm sort of done with this, I don't feel like playing anymore. That find a really good second-to-second experience for the game, that every time you get on there and play it, even if you're not getting rewarded in some tangible fashion, you're able to walk away and say, that was really fun, and I want to do more of it. Kind of like, this is how I feel about the firefight mode for ODST. Yeah, they have achievements, but every single time I play that, and I'm sure Nick and Mike, you can agree to some degree, every single time I play that, it's just tons and tons of fun, and I want to play more of it. I want to do more, because I feel like I can get to the next round, I can get to the next wave, I can beat this, I can do something more, or I could have another crazy experience where I watch as Mike runs over Nick in a warthog.
I think games like sandboxy style combat, like you see in Halo, lends itself a lot more to the modes being rewarding, because anything that has like set waves, like in a mode like that, like you will always experience this thing in this wave, and Halo changes that up a lot. And the AI is okay, and the combat is designed so that you're not using the same strategy every time. And I find that, things that, can keep changing it up are generally more rewarding experience on their own.
Yeah, definitely.
I think you hit the nail on the head with why a lot of multiplayer games go stale and lose their user base. And it might not necessarily be that they don't reward for progress. It's just that they don't change what's there, right? It's just, if it's straight up deathmatch and there's nothing that can really be variable in it, there's only so much versus of that you can do that becomes exciting. So after that first initial rush or two, it just becomes, recycling, and then it's just not as fun. So unless you add the awards, like something like Modern Warfare does, then I think otherwise it's just going to become stale. I think the whole persistent character thing, it has become pretty huge. Since MMOs have obviously made it famous, but I think we're seeing a lot more console titles use it, where, like we said, the single player character kind of crosses both those lines of single and multiplayer and persistence and unlocking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's true of a lot of things, too. Is anything that you invest time and effort in, you kind of want to see some payoff of some sort, and having, as you said, Nick, that persistence character so you feel like you're growing and developing something as you play this definitely helps, you know, lend to that as well of feeling of, okay, I want to come back to this because this is my own Sergeant Johnson who's ranked 5 and has this really awesome personalized pink flower Spartan laser that I got.
Yeah, and, you know, not to bring, you know, the co-op discussion back to MMOs, but I think World of Warcraft actually does a really good thing with this. Obviously, you the more time you invest in the game, you have the gear and things like that to show people, but the way they implemented achievements is really smart in that instead of it just, like, it gives you a couple things. So I play well enough to earn an achievement. Players looking for people to join, like, they don't have enough players to do a dungeon or a raid or whatever, and they can put a call out for people to come join, and you can check if someone has the achievement for having completed this already or completed other things. So you know this player is experienced. And it kind of acts as a player resume that you can show off and that anybody can see. So socially, it ends up working really well. And another thing they do is they actually give you a tangible reward for, you know, you complete this set of achievements. Here's this item you cannot get any other way. And I would kind of like to see something like that, something similar to that in the console games. Like, you know, give me a ridiculously difficult achievement, but also give me something unique for achieving that. And don't flip it around and say, I got this item, so, you know, I got the 5-point achievement for picking it up. Especially in multiplayer stuff, you'll have like a balancing issue, but, you know, in co-op titles, someone that earns an exceptionally, an exceptionally difficult achievement, or, you know, they've put the time together to get this really awesome weapon, or whatnot, would work really well. Yeah. So anyway, it sounds like we've run this through its course. So we're going to wind down here. We've been going for about 45 minutes so far. It's 2010, the year of long podcasts, Nick.
It might be.
Yeah, because our last one was a 90-minute monstrosity. This one's going. I do blame Phil. But Phil will talk here off, and we love him for it. So let's talk about some upcoming co-op releases. It's not too much coming out, except Army of Two, 40th Day, for PS3, 360, and I believe the PSP port comes with those. It's on this Tuesday, the 12th, and I'm sure plenty of people are looking forward to that. And here's something I've been waiting to say for a very long time. On the 13th, this Wednesday, Serious Sam HD Xbox Live. For real. I don't have to say this game's coming out in this segment again, because it's coming out.
I think it's our fifth time now that we said it's coming out.
Yeah. Until Tuesday, and they announced some sort of delay until the next week.
You shut your whore mouth. Anyway, on the 15th, is that Saturday? I don't know. This date looks a little dodgy, Nick, but
Thursday.
Scourge Project. It's Thursday.
Friday.
it's a day ending in Y this week. Scourge Project, the PC version's coming out. Looked pretty interesting from what we saw. I guess we'll see if it comes out. We'll check it out. And on the 20th, next week, we have Death by Cube for Xbox Live Arcade, and I'm nominating that for best game title of the year so far. That had eight player co-op, right?
Yeah, it has 8-player co-op. So, but it's a Square Enix one too. So it's two joystick shooters in like in a month from them. So I don't know. Let's hope it's better than the last one.
Let's hope it's better than Crystal Bears.
Yeah, really. They're not on too good of a roll on our side, are they?
Yeah, trifecta of crap.
They're going to blacklist us.
Yeah. Oh, no, maybe it'll be worth getting blacklisted. Anyway, we've got plenty of features around Co-Optimus, and as astute readers of the site will know, we had a bunch come out. In the past 2 weeks, we had a review of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, The Crystal Bearers, booty-shaking, you know, extended edition, you know, 4D experience and whatever.
The game title
just never ends.
It doesn't. And the only thing I can say is, like, if you like RPGs and you're sort of a fan of stuff, then you might like this. It's very niche, kind of, but play it. You know, I hate to say this, but play it alone. Don't bring a friend, because you're gonna lose the friendship.
Just like easy automatic mode on Bayonetta, play it alone. You don't want to see that. Let's see. We had a review of Band Hero, which I could, you know, it's another music game in the vein of Guitar Hero. And the co-op features match Guitar Hero 5, which is nice, because I believe Van Halen came out, and it was kind of more the older Guitar Hero experience, and we nailed it to the wall for that. But, yeah, Band Hero, if you like Taylor Swift, and I know Nick does.
She's dreamy.
Yeah, you gonna play that on a Lilac PSP?
I'm going to play it by myself.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the editorial from Mark where he starts talking about how his kid develops a crush for Taylor Swift.
Well, Nick developed a crush for Taylor Swift. That's borderline creepy, but you know, I suggest if you want a Taylor Swift fix, Nick, you should try Band Hero's sequel, Google Image Search. Nick reviewed Phantasy Star Zero, and having played that myself, I can tell you wholeheartedly that it is kind of crap.
Please, Sega, make our new Phantasy Star game, a real one.
Phantasy Star 5 has been on my wish list of games forever, and they're just not doing it.
And they gave like a glimmer of a hope with like some of the single player stuff they did in that with the animations and the dialogue and stuff. I was like, oh, this could be cool. Now make it a real game, damn it.
Yeah, well, remember when Phantasy Star Universe came out and they had the whole single player campaign in that? You're like, yeah. You know, it's a single player Phantasy Star game, and oh wait, it's just this multiplayer with crappy cutscenes. Fantastic. But you know, in its day, PSO was friggin' awesome, and I certainly hope that they can, at some point, reclaim the magic, but I just don't see it happening if this is what they're going to give us. Although you said Phantasy Star Portable on the PSP was pretty good, though.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was last year, and it was, it was better than Phantasy Star Zero, I think, just because of the controls.
Well, hopefully we will get a decent Phantasy Star co-op game that also has an awesome campaign. But I'm not holding my breath. So anyway, we had a bunch of features with the, you know, the turn of the decade or year, whatever you subscribe to. Comes with a lot of slow news, and therefore a lot of editorial on our part to fill the news void. And Nick threw together a Games of 2010 article and a video to go along with it. And if you missed last episode of the Co-Opticast, we cover all that stuff in that episode as well.
I just have one question for Nick.
Yeah.
Why did you choose an image of Marty McFly holding a gun to a kid's head to use as the header image?
That was Mike.
That was me. Because okay, it's the future, right?
I'm not surprised. You also picked out the bikini babes for my review, so I'm sensitive.
I try and find the most interesting thing about any game when I create a header image for it, sir. But you know, it's about the future, right? You know, we don't have babies' toys in the future. Anyway, Cat put together a Cry for Co-op, a four player split-screen absenteeism article where she laments the loss of four-player split-screen. And I'll be contrarian and say I don't miss that at all.
I only enjoy it on a movie screen-sized viewing.
Yeah, my TV's not big enough. I value my real estate, and I think I've made my thoughts on split-screen in general well-known on this podcast. So check that out. We did a guest article, and Nick's going to have to remind me of our editor's name here.
Brian Williams?
No. Kevin Williams.
Kevin Williams.
Kevin Williams. Brian Williams is on BC Nightly News, sir.
Well, he's next up. We're getting him. I'm securing that deal right now.
But as an article titled Coin-Op Co-op, A Brief History and a Bright Future, wherein we discuss co-op arcade games in the past and where they're going. And as very interesting, and a lot of people really liked it, so be sure to check it out. It was... I like seeing people write on the subject beyond our staff, just because we kind of all know. Like, we all know what the staff thinks about certain things, or, you know, where our knowledge is, and to have someone else come in and write a guest article is pretty amazing. So check that out. There was a co-op couples article on trading spouses, which I'm not going to say what I want to say about that title.
We all fail. Episode,
a co-op classics episode on Asteroids, the two-player version, or four-player. Check it out. And we did a co-op terminology guide where we talk about the slang inherent to co-op games and the site. And it's very great. I highly suggest reading that one. And I'm sad to say that we have reached the end of another episode of the Co-Opticast, and here's where I'm going to plead with you to leave feedback on iTunes. Give us those good ratings. You know, get us ahead of Oprah in the top podcast list, because that'll happen. You can follow us on Twitter at Co-Optimus, without the dash, and that's about it. Thanks for coming on, Jason.
Sure.
Thanks for putting up with me, Nick.
Sure thing.
And Happy New Year to everybody else, and we will see you in 2 weeks.